Hi ADHDers, just a content warning. In this episode, we will be discussing things like eating disorders, body dysmorphia, and fat phobia. If these topics may be triggering to you, it's okay to skip this episode, and I'll see you next time. Hi ADHDers, and welcome to the KDHD Podcast. I'm your host, Katie, and you're probably here because you've heard, you don't have ADHD, I would have seen the signs. Well, I'm here to help you on this journey of understanding your ADHD and how it impacts your mental health, relationships, careers, and even your body. I've invited some wonderful ADHD professionals and experts to help us learn how to cope with our challenges, but also utilize our strengths. So, here we go. Today's guest is Nicole DeMassey-Melcher. She is a registered dietitian and new mama, here to tell us how ADHD can impact our eating habits, and how she's helping other ADHDers improve their relationship with food. Take it away, Nicole.
My name's Nicole DeMassey-Melcher. I'm a registered dietitian and ADHD specialist. I basically help people with ADHD eat more consistently and stop binge eating so that they can just basically feel less stressed out around food and live a healthier life without feeling like they need to stress out about food or feel like they need to be perfect in any certain way, right? Because we tend to be perfectionists, and that's one thing that I think people really need to work on with ADHD. That was like really long-winded as usual, but that's just kind of what I do. basically I help people stop binge eating with ADHD and eat more consistently.
Which is so important because, like a lot of things with ADHD, we're all or nothing. So like I am definitely one of those people who forget to eat, or I'm hyper focused into something. So I don't even like feel my hunger cues or anything like that. And then all of a sudden I'm just like starving, or, you know, right before bed, and I just want to eat everything in the kitchen and stuff. And so I know that this binge eating can be a real problem for people with ADHD. And I love that you're going out there and supporting and helping people break that cycle. Were you late diagnosed, or were you diagnosed early on as a kiddo?
No, I was just diagnosed like 2.5 years ago. So like really recent. I was 33, and I kind of always knew that I had it, like even since childhood. But I didn't know what it was, right? Because I didn't present in the same way that other people do, like a lot of women, especially that are diagnosed like later in life. We don't really present the same way, or we did okay in school. We weren't really hyperactive. So I'm more of the combined type, but I'm definitely more like anxiety driven, like in my head, very, you know, just constantly ruminating. So I don't appear to be like this hyperactive person. But definitely always was just told that I had anxiety, or told that it was like, you know, it's just the way that you were brought up. It's just your environment at home, like all these excuses that, you know, we get. Cause my was brought up with like a single mom who definitely had ADHD, and she didn't know she had it. And I always say this like to people and to my clients that, like, I think one of the reasons why we don't get diagnosed is because if we have a parent who has undiagnosed ADHD themselves, they just think that our behaviors are normal. They don't like tell you that, oh yeah, you need to go and get help for that. You should go get looked at for that. Like, those behaviors aren't normal. They're just like, oh no, like that's fine. You'll be okay. Like, I do that. It's totally fine. And they just kind of like brush it off. And so you never really realize that you need help until you get older. And so until this day, my mom still denies that she has it, but that's fine. I think a lot of our parents do, but
I think, you know, denial, I think, is definitely part of the process. You know, it's that kind of like, no, I don't, I'm fine, you know, or I might just be a little ADHD, or I might just relate to a couple things that have to do with ADHD. And then you kind of move on. I don't know if there's a light bulb moment or something, or if acceptance just kind of comes one day, or you're just sick of fighting it. But yeah, I definitely think there are these like moments of denial or that imposter syndrome. And I think that ADHD still has so much stigma. So it's not really like something like people say it's trendy, but not really, because people don't want to have ADHD, or they don't want to say they have ADHD, especially people who are from a different generation. Everybody has their own timing. So you never know. Maybe someday
they'll accept it a little bit, or you know, you don't even really have to accept it. You either have it or you don't. So you were talking about thinking as a kid, even as a kid, that you might have had it. Were there some signs as a kid? Could you tell me some of those stories or some of those experiences that you had that definitely made you think, oh yeah, this is definitely something I've had since I was a young child?
Yeah. So I was like one of those kids that was just like always daydreaming and like wandering and kind of like not paying attention in class ever. I was like looking outside the room or watching people walk by the door. I was like doodling, not really paying attention. When I would get called on by the teacher, I would be like, I have no idea what you just asked me. Can you please repeat that? And I'd be so lost, unless it was like a really engaging teacher. And then just like not being able to read, I could read mm-hmm. fine, which is why they would always think like I was just being lazy, because I was really good at reading, but they would ask me what I read and I'd be like, I have no idea, because it wouldn't actually be absorbed. I would just be like focusing on the words, or, you know, just like trying to really, really focus on what I was reading, and I just couldn't do it. So I remember having a really fun, engaging teacher in like fourth grade, and I did really, really well that year. But then other years I didn't do well. And so I noticed that like only when I was really engaged or I liked the situation I was in is when I would do well in school. And now I know that that's an ADHD symptom, right? That interest-based mindset that we have. And it's really interesting, because now that I know what it is, I'm like, oh my God, this makes so much sense, right? We all have that kind of aha moment when we get diagnosed, that like all of these symptoms and everything that I dealt with growing up, and especially, you know, and as an adult, just like totally makes sense. And, but yeah, just sort of the rumination, emotional dysregulation definitely is one of the biggest ones. And then of course, my hyper focus with food and sort of the whole binge eating and disordered eating that we know now is a link between, you know, the dopamine dysregulation and also ADHD, of course. So all of those symptoms kind of combined.
Was there something that happened that made you go like, okay, now it's time to talk to a doctor? Or did you see, like for me, I saw a TikTok video, and I mean, it's so funny. One video changed my life. And so I think I was diagnosed at 29. And so I just love hearing people's kind of like moments where like, okay, now I got to go see the doctor. And then also how that experience worked with you. Was it an aha moment? And then, okay, I need to go talk to the doctor. And then it all kind of fell into place. Or was there some ups and downs in there? Or I just love hearing people's personal experiences, because we're, you know, everybody's so different.
So I used to be like kind of like a hypochondriac when I was a kid, because I'd always be like, I can't remember anything. What is wrong with my memory? Like the, you know, working, because our working memory is really poor. And I would just have all these like weird symptoms. And so I would always Google like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I remember things? Blah, blah, blah. And I never actually put those symptoms all together to see like, is it ADHD? Until I was like, maybe, I don't know, in my 20s, I remember thinking like, could it be ADHD? But then I would read like, no, a lot of kids grow out of it. And it's usually like boys that have it and you have to be really hyperactive. So I would like read all these symptoms and be like, oh no, that's not me. I don't have those, but I have all these other symptoms. And so finally one day, I can't remember how old I was. I think I was 30. And I just Googled like, why can't I focus? What is wrong with me? Why can't I focus? And an Attitude magazine article popped up, and it was like, I was reading an article that I wrote. It like spoke to me so clearly. I was like, oh my God, this is me. I could have written this, like all of these symptoms I have. And it was just insane. I remember just bawling my eyes out. So I finally felt like this is it. Like, this is what's wrong with me. And I remember talking to my husband, who was, you know, we were just dating at the time. And I was like, this is what it is. Like, this explains everything about me. And then of course, like, I never went to the doctor for it, because because at the time I like didn't have a therapist yet or a psychiatrist, but I was like trying to look up like who's the best psychiatrist in the area. And like I was totally doing the whole like perfectionism thing by, you know, getting in my own way and not actually doing anything about it because I didn't know what the best way about it to go about it was. So I just kind of kept pushing it off and pushing it off. Because, you know, we get busy and life just kind of happens and we don't really do anything about it. So, when I finally figured it out was actually during COVID, the beginning of COVID, I could not sit still. I was like getting up and going to the fridge like every 5 minutes. And I would just be like, what is wrong with me? I can't sit still. I'm so fidgety right now. Like I can't focus. I can't do anything. And so then I was finally like, okay, I need to do something about this. This is like too much. And so that's when I saw a psychiatrist finally and got diagnosed way too late in the game. Like if I had known this, you know, 10, 15 years ago, who knows what I would have been able to do, but yeah.
What a relief, right? I remember when I went through that, I don't know if I cried when I saw the TikTok, and very similar to you, I was a hypochondriac growing up as a kid, or I was called a hypochondriac growing up as a kid, which I don't like that term for me, because if I had something, I would go to my doctor and I would be like, I'm pretty sure I have strep throat. And then they're like, okay, let's run some tests. Oh yeah, you have strep throat, you know, and it felt like every time I'd go to the doctor, at least I was right. So I'm like, how am I a hypochondriac if I'm right most of the time? And there were some moments where I wasn't right, or I was being like over dramatic, or I thought I had some form of brain cancer, or I thought I actually thought I had early onset dementia. And like in high school, I was thinking like, something is going on that I have, like my brain is just like a piece of Swiss cheese. And I never knew, like, is this going to stick or is this going to go through the hole? Like, I just never knew what was going to stick with my brain. And so that was something that, it was pretty bad. I think my mom even blocked WebMD on our home computer as a kid at one point, because she's like, you cannot keep doing this. So, I took a break from that after that. I don't think I'm a hypochondriac, but I definitely feel very self-aware. And I think that we get called hypochondriacs because we are looking for an answer. There's something in us that we know is different and we don't know what it is, but we know we are struggling with certain things. And we know we have strengths in certain areas, and either we're the, you know, the daydreamer or the goofy hyper friend, we do feel differently. And so we are looking for those answers. And a lot of people are like, you're just trying to find, you know, something wrong with you. And it's like, no, I'm trying to figure out what is going on so I can, you know, thrive in this society. So yeah, I think that's really funny. And I can completely relate to that, like feeling like a hypochondriac or being called a hypochondriac, because we are just looking for those answers. But yeah, what you're doing now, was there something that made you decide that you wanted to become a dietitian or a nutritionist? I know you said that you hyper-focused on food a lot as a kid or as you were growing up. And I'd love to know kind of how that journey started with you when you decided like, this is what I'm going to do and this is how I'm going to help people.
You know, it's interesting. So growing up, I know that what hyperfocus is, like having ADHD, but I didn't know before that it was me basically hyperfocusing on my body and hyperfocusing on just like calories and being healthy and sort of like, you know, looking at the fat on labels and that type of stuff, like just being really obsessive over food. And I actually didn't know that there was such thing as a dietetics profession growing up until I got into college. It's funny because my obsession with food and everything, it wasn't a reason for me to get into nutrition. It was just a class that I took in college and I loved my teacher. And it was one of those things where I hyper-focused on it. And I was like, wow, this is like one thing that I can finally really focus on. And now that I realize looking back, it was probably because of my obsession with food. I didn't link the two before, but now I know. But yeah, it was one of those things where I was in college for 3 years and I still had no major. And I was like, shoot, I should probably pick something. I have no idea what I want to do with my life. I was just picking all these random classes. And then finally I was like, oh my God, nutrition is amazing. I love it. I love the whole like prevention aspect of it. And so then I transferred to a different college and started, you know, my career there. And then, you know, that was 10 years ago now. I'm sorry. No, 2007, I chose my major. That was a long time ago. And then I became a dietitian almost 10 years ago. So I didn't actually start working with people with ADHD until the last 2 years, until I, you know, when I was finally diagnosed. And it's so interesting because I never once was taught about nutrition in relation to ADHD throughout all of my years in school and all the hospitals and the outpatient programs and everything that I've worked at, even in mental health programs. You never hear about ADHD and nutrition. So this was something that I kind of connected the dots to, you know, myself on my own experiences and then just reading some articles. And then I sort of just, you know, combined the two and I was like, this is related to this. And then I started figuring it all out. And then now it's so funny because if you look on Instagram, there's like, it's kind of all over the place in the ADHD world. It kind of blew up. I'm not going to take credit for it, but I feel like it helped a little bit in that area. No, I'm kidding. but no, it's true. And I actually am so happy because there's so many of us that struggle with ADHD and binge eating. And, that's definitely why I do what I do. Like I feel like I finally found my passion in my niche in nutrition, and it makes me so happy that I'm finally doing it. So
it feels so good to like utilize those interests and like our passions and make them into something that can actually like make us money or and help others. So that's mm-hmm. awesome. I'm so happy that you found that in nutrition and in food, and that you're going out there and you are educating others about ADHD and nutrition, because I didn't really know much about nutrition or dietitians. I didn't know that those were even jobs really, even until maybe the last 10 years. And so I understood food. I thought I like understood what food was and like, you know, what is good food and what is bad food. It's so funny with social media and adding all of these dietitians and nutritionists who specialize with ADHD. It's been so educational and healing for me because I am learning more and I'm like realizing like all those things that I thought I knew about food and nutrition or just, you know, just in general are wrong. And, you know, probably told to me because from something so outdated in the 90s, you know? And so I love that you are, you know, educating people about it. And so in the ADHD community, we do hear the word binge eating a lot. And could you explain what that is and the correlation between binge eating and ADHD?
Well, first of all, let me just say that when we hear the word binge, a lot of us kind of like throw it around loosely, right? Like we say, oh, you might binge on Netflix, or you might binge on chips, for example. Like I think people use the word too loosely, whereas like a binge eating disorder is a very serious eating disorder. It's not like, you know, just something where you like, oh, I just ate too much. It's actually where you're eating a large quantity of food in one sitting to the point where you feel uncomfortable. And you feel like very, very overly full to the point of sometimes people even feel like they need to vomit. And not everyone with ADHD has this binge eating disorder, of course. Like you have to be diagnosed by a therapist or somebody who specializes in eating disorders. So it's not just like, you know, if you are overeating all the time that you have binge eating disorder either. So it does need to be diagnosed, and it has a diagnosis in the DSM, just like any other eating disorder or disability. But when we talk about binge eating in general, it just means like you're probably overeating to the point of discomfort several times a week. And it's kind of this like unconscious eating almost, where you like find yourself eating to sort of like numb pain or to just change some sort of mental discomfort that you're having, right? So you're sort of using food as your way to band-aid something else. So for a lot of us, because we lack stimulation, right? We lack dopamine. So we use food to stim, or we might use food to cope with emotion. And because we have a lot of emotional dysregulation with ADHD, we tend to use food to, you know, help with those emotions, right? So we call it emotional eating, right? A lot of us have heard of that term. Or it could just be that we are forgetting to eat all day. Some of us take medications like stimulants that decrease our appetite during the day, so we're not able to actually get enough food in. And so that, you know, quote unquote binge at the end of the day isn't really something where you're like covering up emotions, but it's actually just your physiological response to say like, wow, you didn't eat all day. Now we need to make up for it later in the day. But a lot of times that making up for it turns into guilt and shame and those feelings of, you know, like, what did I just do? I feel terrible because I overate. And then weight comes along with it, right? So the fear of being overweight, or sort of that, you know, weight stigma that comes along with it. So there's a lot of things involved, right? So it's also, you know, if you're dieting and you're in that diet mentality where you're restricting and you feel like you can't eat because you want to lose weight, a lot of times that will make you feel very out of control around food to the point where you feel like, you know, it's sort of that like last supper eating. It's like, well, you know what? I'm just going to eat all of the cake because I had one piece. I might as well just have it all. And then my diet starts again on Monday. So it's like, I'm just going to eat all the things because of X, Y, and Z, whatever. Right. So there's all these different reasons, and that's that all or nothing thinking that comes along with having ADHD. Right. So there's that perfectionism piece. There's things like, not planning ahead and poor time management also, which affects it as well. So with ADHD, we have these, like, there's a whole list of, I guess, sort of like symptoms or things that we would see that we struggle with. And I'll go through the list just so that people, the listeners who are not familiar with it, can actually get a better understanding of some of the reasons why we struggle with eating. So the first one that I always talk about is that impulsivity, right? So we have impulsivity with ADHD, and that impulsivity can be caused by lots of different things, right? It can be maybe you haven't eaten enough today, and you're feeling a little bit impulsive because it's driven by a physiological reason. So like maybe it's just because you haven't eaten enough, and so your body's sort of making up for it. Or the impulsivity can be driven by something like dieting. And so the whole act of dieting and sort of being in that scarcity mindset where you feel like you can't have something, it makes you want to have something even more, right? So it drives that neediness to have chocolate, for example. So like, let's say you say, I'm not going to eat chocolate because I'm on a diet. If you really want chocolate and you feel like you can't have it, that chocolate has so much power over you, and that's all you can think about. So then when you do eat the chocolate, it's almost like, oh, I ate it. I messed up. I'm terrible. I'm just going to eat all the chocolate. And then my diet starts again on Monday, for example. So that might cause something like a binge because you feel out of control around it. And then there's things like, you know, stimming with food. So just sort of being bored all the time and needing food to sort of fill that gap. And then there's emotional eating caused by emotional dysregulation. So something like being really emotional because you had a bad day. And so you go and you use food to sort of, you know, calm those feelings instead of really being able to deal with them and cope with their emotions. And that's true, especially for people that don't know that they have ADHD, because you don't really know how your mind works and what's going on. So we tend to use food. And so a lot of the people that I work with come to me and they just don't even understand why they're eating so much. And so the first thing that we need to do is kind of get to the bottom of it. Like, what is driving this binging? What's driving the need to overeat all the time to a point of feeling discomfort? And then a lot of us just forget to eat, or we just ignore our hunger and fullness cues, right? So forgetting to eat is a big one, because I mean, let's face it, we're not good at time management because of our executive dysfunction, right? So we have poor planning skills. So we either don't have enough food in the house, maybe we forgot to go shopping, or maybe we just forgot to bring our lunch with us to work. Like maybe we actually did make it, but oh shoot, I forgot it on the kitchen table because I was in a rush and whatever, however the day looks for you. Or it can just be because you have poor, what we call interoceptive awareness, which is basically the ability to feel your body sensations. And so you don't feel that hunger until you're really, really hungry, right? So I always use the analogy, like, if you've ever really had to go to the bathroom, let's say, like, it's like you have to pee, but you wait so long that now you're like, oh my gosh, if I don't go right now, I'm really just going to pee my pants. Like that's something that we do all the time with ADHD. And we do that same thing with hunger. It's like, you just wait way too long and to the point where you get that like hangry, right? So you're just like, you're pissed off, or you're just like, you can't cope with your emotion. So then the emotional dysregulation is even worse at that point. So then you might overeat because you're eating so fast, and then you feel like crap after, and then you feel like that guilt and that shame. And then you might restrict the next day because you feel like you overeat and you ate all the things. And so there's that restriction binge cycle that we see often all the time. And so there's just, you know, we really need to just get to the bottom of why that's happening and figure it out. And so there's a couple other things. There's like, you know, of course, disordered eating. So if you have that obsession with body image or let's say body dysmorphia, where you want your body to look a certain way, that might cause you to restrict, which is very common among us, especially for, you know, I would say young women who are already prone to eating disorders as it is. But then, you know, add on top of that, the feeling of not really being able to fit into a group and sort of looking for those answers like you were talking about earlier, right? Where like, what's wrong with us? Why can't I fit in? Maybe if I was a little bit thinner, maybe if I was a little bit, you know, better looking, or maybe if I was a little bit X, Y, and Z, I could fit in a little bit more. I could make more friends, or whatever, you know, whatever it is that you're dealing with. We sort of hyper-focus on that. And that's, you know, very common with us. And then there's like sensory issues as well. So some people have sensory issues with food where they might be very picky, or they might feel like they don't really like certain textures or flavors, you know, and that's more common, especially among the autistic community. So there's just a lot of things that get in the way with our eating, especially because of executive dysfunction. So I know that's a whole lot of information, but complicated.
I love it. It's great to have like kind of a beginner's course and a refresh on that, because there are a lot of things that I still don't know, and I'm still learning, and how, you know, having ADHD impacts my relationship with food. I don't feel my hunger cues. And so like, I don't notice that I'm like hungry until my boyfriend looks over at me. He's like, your stomach is growling so loud. And I'm like, and I kind of like think, I'm like, oh, it's 4 o'clock and I haven't eaten all day. Like, no wonder I'm starving. And then all of a sudden I'm like, I am hungry. I need to eat now. And so then I'm just like grabbing whatever is ready because I'm so hungry at that point that I don't have time to prepare something, or I'm too overwhelmed to prepare something big. And then I'm like, well, it's, you know, this time I'll just wait until dinner. And so, and I do that a lot, and that's not healthy. And so I'm trying to find ways, instead of like feeling bad about that, finding ways to like help support it. So having things for those moments where I need to eat now, but feel too overwhelmed to prepare something, is like just heating up a tortilla or having a protein shake that's already pre-made, or just having things that you can pop in the microwave, or, you know, having like snacks available and stuff like that. And I would love to hear any tips that you have as a professional for things like that with, you know, people who struggle with, you know, whether it's restricting or binge eating.
Yeah, totally. And the thing is too, is like, I'm not immune to that either. Like I have ADHD, and even though I'm a dietitian and I know exactly what I need to do, for us, it's not knowing what you need to do. It's like you actually need to put it in place and remember to do it. Like you have to remind yourself to do it, right? Like I could write a book on this stuff, but that doesn't mean that I'm not going to forget to eat if I don't make sure that I'm eating, right? So I think the first thing is reminding yourself to check in like every few hours. So whatever type of like time management system you have, whether it's using post-it notes or it's putting it in your phone or on your computer, like wherever your workstation is, you need some type of visual and audio reminder to say like, are you hungry? Are you thirsty? Have you eaten today? Do you need to pee? Like do a check-in, check all these things. Because when we get into hyper-focus, we just like the time passes and like 15 minutes feels like 3 hours, right? Mm-hmm. So I always recommend to everyone who's starting out with just sort of learning their hunger cues and their fullness cues, just check in every 3 hours to start and just make sure that you actually like don't shut it off without actually taking action. It's okay to like snooze it. For example, if you have an alarm and you can't get up right away, but snooze it, don't shut it off. Because if you shut it off, you're just going to forget and those hours are going to pass by. And like you said, if you get up and you go get something to eat and it's like, you're already starving. And like, I don't know about you, but I am so indecisive when I'm already that hungry. You cannot make a good decision about anything when you're hungry. I mean, for me anyway, I know I can't. Like when I get like that and I'm like, I don't know, where should we eat? It's like that whole like couples thing where you're like, where should you eat? I don't know, where should we eat? I don't know, what do you want? I don't know, what do you want? I'm too hungry, I can't decide. And then you like start freaking out. It's like, no, we need to have a plan before. Or if I start getting like hangry, like you said, your boyfriend looks at you. My husband's like, we need to feed you. I'm like, oh, you're right. I need to eat. So I've learned over the years that like, if I start getting hangry, it's probably because I need to eat, right? Like my blood sugar is starting to drop. I need something. So what I would say is have those quick, easy options on hand all the time. Even if you think you don't need it, you might need it. Like have a backup, have things in your kitchen or in your pantry all the time that's like really easy for you. Then make sure that it has carbs and protein. And the reason for that is because everyone needs carbohydrates, right? So there's this whole like thing in the diet culture world that carbs are bad for you. They're not. Like there's no such thing as good or bad foods, right? Everyone needs carbs. Your brain needs carbs. Carbs are your brain's main source of fuel, right? So you need the carbs in order to fuel your brain and to have energy, but you also need protein because protein is going to help to slow down how quickly those carbs are digested. But it's also going to help you to build neurotransmitters as well, which we need with ADHD. I mean, carbohydrates do too, but protein especially. So protein is going to help you to stay full longer. And it's going to help you just to really stay satiated so that you don't need to eat as frequently in between meals. And the point of that is not to reduce calories by any means, because this is nothing to do with weight or weight loss or anything like that. And I'm actually anti-diet for anybody that's listening. I don't believe in that. And I'll tell you why in a little bit if you're interested. But I think that the reason is just so that with ADHD, we don't want to have to worry about having food constantly ready for us or constantly making food every, you know, hour, 2 hours. So it's good to make sure you have something that's going to last for at least 3 hours. And then that's a good time to sort of check in and eat a little bit more. Yeah. So typically what I recommend is just trying to eat every 3 to 4 hours. That's about the amount of time that it takes for your blood sugar to peak and then sort of start tailing off. So what that means is if your blood sugar is starting to drop after 3 to 4 hours, you're going to start to feel like you need some carbohydrates again. And so when people are dieting, and they're skipping carbohydrates and things, like if they're on a low carb diet, for example, or they feel like they're just sort of being good, like they're being healthy by having a salad for lunch, for example, but they didn't have any carbs with it. Or they just have a handful of nuts or something like that because they think they're doing a really great thing by just, you know, fueling their brain by having this, like, you know, protein, but they're not actually getting enough carbohydrates. You're going to start to really drop in your blood sugar and you're going to have like a craving for sugar. So a lot of times those sugar cravings that everyone talks about in the ADHD world is actually because we're just not eating enough. Or we're not eating frequently enough, right? So it's just important to make sure that you do get a good amount of carbohydrates and protein together every 3 to 4 hours. So whether it's a snack or a meal, that could be something like super easy, like a peanut butter sandwich, right? Or like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It could be even just like that's your carbs and your protein. It could be fruit and nuts. Mm-hmm. It could be something like
hummus and crackers. I love hummus and crackers, or like, you know, I love like peanut butter and Ritz or something like that, just to give me something that I enjoy and does feel filling to, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. And it doesn't need to be like diet food. And so, mm-hmm. and we'll get into a little bit more about diet culture, but it shouldn't be diet food. It should be whatever satiates you and whatever makes you feel good. Right. And so a lot of times that is going to be foods that are very nourishing to your body, because those tend to be what make us feel good. But that doesn't mean that you can't add in some what I call like play foods, like chocolate, for example. I love chocolate. I love dark chocolate. But if you only eat chocolate every day, all day, you're probably not going to feel very good after you eat it. Right. So it's good to add in a little bit of protein and a little bit of carbohydrates and hopefully some veggies if you like veggies with it, along with it. And when I say carbohydrates, just for anyone who's listening and they're super new to, you know, like nutrition and nutritious foods and what all that means, carbohydrates are things like bread, pasta, fruit, you know, like bagels and rice and all of those like starchy type foods. And then your proteins would be things like meat, cheese, fish, eggs, beans, tofu, you know, that type of stuff. So those two things combined. And it doesn't always need to be like this extravagant meal that you're going to prepare. It can be really quick foods. Like I said before, I'm a huge fan of things like canned beans, because you don't need to, you know, they don't go bad for one. You can just keep them in the cupboard. You can add beans to anything. So like I add beans to pasta a lot of times, because I don't, like with meat, it takes longer to make and prepare meat, right? And it can go bad in the fridge. Whereas like something like pasta and beans, you have them, you know, all the time. You can keep them in your cupboard. You don't have to remember to go shopping for them. They're just right there. You can add a can of something like tomato sauce or pesto or something, whatever you have in the cupboard. Same thing with like canned tuna and some bread, that mixed together, or you can do tuna on crackers. Just like super simple things. So what I recommend is to make a list of these really easy foods that you can have on hand, sort of like your pantry essentials, where you can create a meal or a snack at any given time, so that you always have something super simple and easy to grab when you need to.
Yeah, I love tuna. I go into like kicks where I'm like obsessed with a food and then I like kind of dip down, and I feel like tuna is probably the most underrated food source there is. Like, people don't give tuna the time of day or like the props it needs, because I love it. And like, I love tuna noodle and tuna sandwiches, and just like I eat it as like dip. Like, I'll like make, you know, tuna with some celery and red onions and just like a few other things just to kind of like add some crunch in there. And the amount of time that it can stay in your cupboard, and you can buy like kind of buy it in bulk and just have it in there. And now they even have like pouches that you can take with you. And I think that's definitely a great option and a really tasty option too, that I like. And so you were talking about like diet culture, and I would love to hear you know, kind of what your views are on diet culture, and what are some maybe even like warning signs or things that should maybe raise the hair on the back of our head when we're hearing something that might actually be contributing to diet culture? Because I'm sure with social media, you know, there's some amazing nutritionists and dietitians out there, but then we also have people on there that are encouraging certain types of diets or certain types of lifestyle that really aren't beneficial to anyone, especially people with ADHD who are looking for ways to fit in and looking for ways to be accepted and looking for ways to like fix their brain, you know? And so I feel like people with ADHD are more likely to try fad diets because we are looking for that thing and we are impulsive and we're like, okay, this is going to be the thing. I'm going to throw out all my crackers. I'm going to throw out all my bread. I'm just going to do this for now and try this. And we're, you know, we are all or nothing, but that doesn't stick with us and it's not healthy for us.
Yeah. Oh my God. And that's for everyone too, not even just with ADHD, but like you said, for us, especially because we do have that like shiny object syndrome where if something gives us dopamine, we're just like, yes, I want more of it. I want more of it. And so if that's for you, like, let's say you want to like lose weight, which just want to totally throw this out here that there's tons and tons of research that show that weight does not show any indication of health, just so you guys know. There's tons and tons of papers that have been published that says like, you know, what the basically what medicine would describe as like overweight or obese does not correlate to health in any way. Like, yes, it can be related to things like diabetes, or it could be related to things like high blood pressure, but it's not the weight itself that's causing those things. It's actually more lifestyle factors. So when I'm talking about weight, I want you guys to know that your weight does not represent you as a person, or it doesn't represent your health in any way. That's all weight stigma, it's all fat phobia. And if you are interested in learning more about that, I highly recommend looking up research papers or more information on HAES, which is Health at Every Size. And I just highly recommend, doing research on that. Cause I know there's people that are listening that are probably like, what are you talking about? Like weight doesn't have to do with health. Like my doctor told me I need to lose weight. And like, yeah, lots of doctors will because they're not up to date on this research, unfortunately, in the medical field. And even a lot of dietitians aren't. And I think most of us as dietitians are really guilty for being, you know, teaching people to be really restrictive. And that's because that's what we were taught in school, is just, you know, we need to fix things. We need to find something to fix. We need to find the problem. And so we're problem solvers just naturally, especially with ADHD, right? We're problem solvers as well. So we always look at things. We'll look at your, you know, let's say your labs, we'll look at your cholesterol, we'll look at your weight, and we'll say, okay, we need to prescribe you a diet. And these are all the things, the list of things that you need to restrict, right? And with ADHD, a lot of times the first thing you do is, how can I eat certain foods, or what can I eat to get rid of my ADHD? And it's like, well, no, first of all, you can't get rid of ADHD. You either have it or you don't. There's no magic food. There's no magic pill even that can take ADHD away, right? Yes, if you're eating unhealthy in a way, and what I mean by that is if you're skipping meals, if you are not listening to your body and you're just eating foods that make you feel unwell all the time and you're not honoring, you know, or respecting your body in that way, yes, it's going to make anyone feel like crap. It doesn't matter if you have ADHD or not. So it's going to make your symptoms feel exacerbated because maybe you're low in energy, or maybe you're not really sleeping well, for example, if you're just relying on coffee as a meal, and that's not a meal, right? So there's just all these different things that we look at, but people are so quick to want to find answers when they get diagnosed with something. So if you Google like foods to eat for ADHD, you're going to see all of these elimination diets and things that you should, you know, really try to stay away from. And I'm not going to lie to you. When the first thing I thought when I first figured out it was ADHD was the functional medicine route, which is like things you need to avoid, things you need to restrict, in order to sort of fix yourself, right? Because I was still in that mindset myself as a dietitian. And then I started realizing, okay, bigger picture here. I was actually making myself worse and more, you know, sick, so to speak, by being so restrictive, because of the fact that when you're restrictive, you're probably not really nourishing your body. You're probably not listening to your body. You're not respecting it. You're not honoring your hunger. I was sort of like the orthorexic, which is when you're like really obsessed with your health, and it's now considered an eating disorder, where you're so restrictive with your food, and that it really affects your life. And so I think the biggest warning signs is just restriction in general. Like any diet that tells you that, or any diet, anything that's called a diet, is really going to cause you to not listen to your body in a way that you need to honor your hunger and fullness, and to just kind of figure out what you need yourself. And in terms of like diet culture, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. It's all over the place. And I think the problem is that it's so normalized now that we don't even know it as diet culture. We just know it as like real, like normal life. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, yeah, anything that's restrictive, anything that you see that's telling you to cut this out or cut that out, anything that's telling you that you can like, you know, lose weight overnight by doing X, Y, and Z, or you can like, you know, you can get rid of your ADHD symptoms, or you can do, you know, anything that looks too good to be true is typically going to be false advertisement anyway. I don't know, like, what are some of the things that you've seen lately with ADHD and diet culture related?
So in the ADHD world, I see a lot. So I posted a video. This is a great example. So I posted a video, I don't know, maybe a few months ago, about like things that I eat when I feel too overwhelmed to cook. And so there were just like a list of things that I was like, this is what I eat when I'm too overwhelmed to cook. It wasn't dietitian advice. It wasn't nutritional advice. It was just like, these are things that when I feel too overwhelmed to cook because I forgot or because I pushed it, that I eat. And there's like, I think there was like a tortilla, just a plain tortilla, just to get something in my stomach. Like popcorn, this, like those fruit cups that you can buy that have like peaches or pears or anything in them. Gosh, there was a few different things that I put on there, and the amount of comments I got about like, carbs are terrible for people with ADHD, stay away from carbs, stay away from, you know, this and that. And it like really just opened my eyes to see like how many people stigmatize certain foods because of their diagnosis. And it's like, if I do not care, as long as you are eating something and you feel empowered and feel nourished by it at that moment, then I don't really care like what you're eating. The most important thing is to not to restrict, you know. And that's kind of what I've encouraged people is, and I'm not saying like just eat a bunch of chocolate or anything like that, but I'm saying like, if you need to grab something to eat, don't feel bad about just eating something because your body needs it and that you enjoy it. And so, I mean, the restricting thing, the staying away from carbs thing is always a red flag for me. When people start bringing red dye into things, I'm kind of weary about the red dye thing. And I don't have a lot of information on that, but it's like, I've had ADHD my whole life. You know, me eating Flamin' Hot Cheetos as a teenager probably has nothing to do with my ADHD, you know? So it is, those things do kind of like still pop up a lot in my feed, but I have been doing my best to, you know, and this is advice I would give to anybody, is you can block someone for free. You can block them for free. They probably won't even realize you did it. So if you're scrolling through TikTok or if you're scrolling through Instagram and that person that keeps coming up your feed and is posting like healthy keto diets or, you know, the healthy version of this, you know, it's like, if to me, what did I see? I saw something the other day. Oh, I think it was like a healthy Oreo shake. And it was disgusting. It was like, there was like beans and all sorts of like weird stuff. And it's like, honey, if you want to go to McDonald's and get an Oreo McFlurry, and go do that. Like, don't put your pinto beans in my ice cream. Oh. Like, it's just, it's so funny. It's like, we got to stop coming up with these like healthy versions of food and just like nourish our bodies and eat things that we enjoy and just like creating a healthy relationship with food. Maybe like you said, like going back and looking at like maybe where it started or what it's rooting from and dismantling those beliefs about food. And then, you know, like I said, blocking people is free. So I block a lot of people who post stuff about their bodies that I don't agree with or nutrition. And then I follow people who have science-backed information about nutrition. So I'm following dietitians, nutritionists. Not too long ago, I made a video about body dysmorphia. And in that video, I didn't tag anybody who influences or endorses diets. I only tagged nutritionists, dietitians, and counselors for eating disorders, because that is what I think we need to start putting more stock in. We need to start listening to these people who have education in these things and can look at the data and go, no, this is not okay. Stop freaking telling me to eat a bell pepper instead of bread. If I want to eat a bell pepper on the side of a sandwich, I will do that because I like bell peppers, but I also like bread. And I think that since I've done that, since I've kind of like put those blinders and those earmuffs on towards diet culture and started just listening to like what I enjoy and like eating, you know, I don't have to bribe myself to put things into my food, but sometimes I'm like, oh, if I'm making, like you said, pasta, I'd be like, oh, I have some like frozen broccoli. I'll toss some frozen broccoli in there just to add a little bit of something. And so taking like maybe some recipes that you already love, instead of restricting, maybe toss in a couple things and add things. And I people with ADHD love to try new things. And so if I am struggling with going through like a slump where I'm like, I don't know what to cook, I'll start going on Pinterest and just looking up recipes that with things I like. And I think that's been really helpful to me is blocking people and listening to myself and questioning things I hear. When my dad had cancer twice, and so he's been having really hard times with his health. And recently, after his last bout with cancer, he went on the keto diet. And he was like obsessed and he lost a ton of weight. And I'm not gonna lie, he lost a ton of weight and he looked really good. But I kept thinking like, this is not like, I would never be on a diet where they tell me I can't eat a banana. So that in my mind was like a red flag. I was like, okay, if a diet is telling you not to enjoy fruits and vegetables, that is a warning sign to me. If a diet is saying to restrict from whole wheats and grains, that is a red flag to me. And I know that now, but it's not something I would have known before. You know, I know that there are people who have celiac disease and have to stay away from things like gluten, but making that choice for yourself just to lose weight, the odds of you keeping that off are so low, because I've seen people do that where they go on a diet and they lose the weight and they go off the diet and they gain it all back. That's not good for your body. And that's not good for your mental health or your body image either. You know?
Yeah. I think there's so many things that you said that I'm like, oh my God, there's like light bulbs going off, because yeah. I mean, and just like with ADHD, we have poor working memory. So I'm like, oh yeah, that I could have said that. And I could have said that. And I could have said that, because I've been around diet culture for so long as a dietitian now that I don't even think of these things anymore. Like you said, like keto diet or, you know, the Atkins diet. There's always a new low carb diet that comes out that's like reinvented, and it's the same freaking thing. And they're all restrictive. No matter what it is, if it's restrictive, it's probably going to put you back into that restrictive mindset and get into that binge restrict cycle again that I was talking about. Mm-hmm. You need to be in control of your body and figure out what it is that makes you feel good. And anytime you're being controlled by this, you know, and like an outside influence, like by a diet, for example, you're not going to be listening to your own body and to your hunger and fullness cues. And it's just going to make you feel more out of control around food. So regardless of what it is, like, we need to look at the big picture. Like, yes, people can lose weight on the keto diet, but does losing the weight really mean that you're healthy inside? Weight doesn't have any indication of health, right? So if all you're eating is like bacon and burgers or you know, like a lot of the things that people eat on a keto diet. And yeah, you might be saying like, oh, there's a healthier way to do keto diet. Yeah, there might be, but it's not sustainable long term. And 2/3 of people who actually go on a diet gain more weight than what they started with to begin with, which is insane. And that there is a lot of research on that. Again, if you guys want to go and look up the research that is done with Hayes and intuitive eating is basically just eating. So before there was like things called diets, intuitive eating would just be eating, right? It's listening to your hunger and fullness cues. It's honoring your body and respecting that, and eating in a way that feels good without restriction, without judgment, without guilt, without shame, without any of those things. And it's really just eating. We're all born to be intuitive eaters. So if you look at like a kid or a baby, like they know when they're hungry, they know when they're full. They don't feel the need to finish what's on their plate. They don't feel the need to restrict, right? They eat when they want and they stop when they're full. These are all things that we should be able to do. But over the years, diet culture has told us that we need to lose weight. We need to do this. We need to look this way. We need to eat this. We need to not eat that. Foods are good. Foods are bad. Like none of these things are actually helpful for us in the long run, because so many people have been yo-yo dieting their whole lives. And how many of those people do you know are actually maintain that weight for a long time and feel good? Mm-hmm. Like most of the people I know, no, that doesn't happen. They're usually worse off, or they need to do more dieting, because what happens every time you diet is your metabolism actually lowers, because your body becomes more efficient. Your body becomes more efficient at basically running in low power mode without having the amount of calories that it actually needs. So it's almost like your body goes into low power mode and your metabolism slows down. So then when you go back to eating how much you were eating before, you're going to gain weight. And so there's something called the set point weight, which is basically the weight at which your body is metabolically stable. And so your set point weight can actually decrease over time, the more and more that you diet. And so we want to try to get to a place where we are not restricting, and we are just listening to our body. And the way to do that is to shut out all the noise, get rid of the diet culture. Like you said, block people, stop following people. Anyone that's telling you to restrict, cut these things out, and really find somebody who is going to specialize in intuitive eating like myself, or there's some other dietitians, tons and tons of dietitians that specialize in intuitive eating that can help. And so basically, what we need to do is just make food normalized so that it's habituated. And what I mean by that is making food just a normal part of your life rather than giving it so much control and so much power over you. And that way you don't feel out of control around it. You can be able to have cake in your fridge and not feel like you're going to eat the entire thing, right? And not feel guilty for it too. Mm-hmm. So like there's ways to do this, and that's mostly what I do with people, is get them to a point where their mindset is completely just sort of unfazed by certain foods. Like, yeah, you can still get excited by food. You can still eat foods that are, you know, quote unquote, healthy or nourishing for your body, but you can also eat all the other foods as well. And you can, there's a balance, right? And you can feel well while you're doing it. But it's so funny that you say that about like the, you know, with the red dye and, you know, yellow number 5 and like all of these things that people initially cut out when they first get, you know, diagnosed with ADHD. And there are people that swear by it, but there's no real concrete research to say that any type of restriction helps with ADHD. There's no research out there. And people swear by like cutting out sugar. They say they feel so much better. Well, yeah, I mean, if you were binging on sugar before and it, you know, you weren't really eating a nourishing amount of food that made you feel good, replacing those sugar binges with maybe more nourishing food, of course you're going to feel good. It doesn't have anything to do with ADHD or sugar for that matter. It's just because you're nourishing your body. And so we have to think about, you know, what we're actually replacing these behaviors with And rather than just sort of finding a solution and saying that it was the sugar that did it, if that makes sense. But yeah, there's just any sort of restriction I would say to avoid.
Yeah. That is hard too, is you, like you said, the shiny thing is like we find something we think is shiny that we could go out and shop for it and buy all the things or buy all the little containers to meal prep and then all this stuff, and then all and your impulse shopping. Yeah. And then that is not good either. And so, yeah. You know, we do get excited and wrapped up with it, but then the likelihood of that sticking is not going to happen. Instead of just like it, looking at food as not good or bad, but something that you enjoy eating. My own relationship with food has really changed the past few years. And it didn't really have to do with ADHD. It just mostly had to do with like my own body image and my own thoughts about my body and like letting go of those thoughts and going like, I actually love food. Like I really do. And I like to experiment with food. I like to try new things. I love to cook. I love green beans straight out of the garden. And so there are things that I love that I'm eating now and I'm not feeling guilty about it.
Intuitive eating doesn't mean like you can just eat like whatever you want, whenever you want, all the time, right? Like if you look up the hashtag intuitive eating on Instagram, I think there's a whole misconception about like, oh yeah, people that eat intuitively just eat whatever they want and they just gain all this weight and it's not healthy. And that's really not it at all. It has nothing to do with weight, first of all, right? It's about honoring your hunger and fullness, like I keep saying over and over again. But it also incorporates gentle nutrition. And gentle nutrition means like you're adding in foods that provide nourishment to your body, but they're also satisfying. So it doesn't mean that you need to, like you mentioned, like adding in broccoli before. If adding in broccoli to your dish just does not sound appetizing to you and you hate broccoli, you don't need to force yourself to eat it. You want to add something that you enjoy eating that brings you satisfaction and makes you feel good. Great bonus if it's also nourishing. And you'll find over time that when you're doing when you're eating intuitively, that you start to crave these foods naturally. So like all of my clients that I work with, there's this phase in the beginning where yes, you have to give yourself unconditional permission to eat all foods. And so they might feel like there's a period of time for like a few weeks to months where they do kind of just eat whatever they want because they weren't allowing themselves to eat any of those things before because they were in such a restrictive state. But they get to that point where they're like, you know what? This doesn't feel good anymore. I want to start adding nourishing foods, and I'm going to add these in because I want to, not because I have to. And that's the difference. You're adding them in not because the diet tells you to or not because you feel guilty, but because you're just genuinely craving these foods naturally because you know they're going to make you feel good. And that doesn't mean that you can, you know, you have to eat only fruits and vegetables all the time. Like you should add in foods that like are play foods that are satisfying to you. So that might look like, you know, having chocolate, but also adding some nuts with it because you love chocolate, but you know that the nuts are also going to keep you full and satisfied. And these aren't rules. These are just things that you should do to, you know, to keep you satisfied. And that is like, I think the biggest misconception that I wanted to mention with gentle nutrition. And so you do get to a point where you are eating a balance of these play foods and these nourishing foods. And you do get to a point where your body sort of levels off and your metabolism is at a really good place. And your weight is sort of at a place where it's at a set point, meaning that your body is metabolically stable and you're not going to have these huge dips and, you know, highs and lows with your weights. It's going to get to that place. But you also find that you become much more intuitive in all these other areas of your life as well. Right? So you start to really listen to your body and your cues and what you need. And you'll start to figure out that maybe you weren't drinking enough water, or maybe you weren't actually honoring your time, or maybe you weren't honoring your boundaries or your respect for yourself. And there's just so many different doors that it opens up for you when you start to eat intuitively, because it's really just about relearning about yourself and what you need and your cues. So that's just something that I wanted to mention about intuitive eating, because I think it's really helpful for anyone, and especially for us with ADHD.
I love that message. I think it's so important. And I've heard like the term food freedom a lot too in the ADHD community, along with the intuitive eating. And I think it is so freeing when you do let go of those misconceptions about food and nutrition and diet culture and all of that, and you feel free. And then that is just one step closer to just, you know, healing and working towards those other things. And it really does help everything else come a lot easier too. The things that are holding us back, or the things that are controlling us, or what we thought, you know, how to eat, those are things that people have been dealing with, you know, for a long time. And it takes a long time to break those. But when you do it, it is so empowering and so freeing. And I appreciate everything that you're doing to help educate people and talking about, you know, intuitive eating and breaking the binge cycle. And, you know, what you said about no foods being bad foods, I really think that's important too. And, you know, I think it's going to be hard for some people to hear listening to this podcast that they don't have to cut carbs out, you know, and so it's okay. And, you know, maybe even take some baby steps. So, you know, it's not everything is easy the first day, and it might not come naturally, and it takes a long time. And just like healing, it's not linear. I have a really good relationship with food, but I still have, you know, some things that are in the back of my mind, and I have to remind myself, no, that's not a bad food. It's just, I've been told it's a bad food, you know? And so is there anything that you would like to plug? Your website, or do you have a program, and then maybe just your social media?
Yeah. So I currently have a few different things going on. If you go over to eatingwithadhd.com, you'll see I currently have a course that's running. It's a 10-week course. And you can binge it if you want to, and you can do it all at once, or you can do it over 10 weeks, which is what I recommend, because again, it's not a race to figure out how to eat intuitively. It is, you know, it kind of takes a little bit longer for some people, and that's totally normal. But the name of the course is just Eating with ADHD, and it's basically an intuitive eating course for people with ADHD so that they can go through these steps. So I take them through the 9 steps that I use to get people to get to a place where they feel comfortable with food, where they're not binging, they're eating more consistently. They are, you know, figuring out better ways to plan and to prep and to cook and do all of these things that really get them to a place where they can eat in a way that makes them feel good. And that includes things like figuring out emotional eating and all of those other things that we talked about. So that's the course. And then starting in April, I'm going to be opening up spots for my small group coaching program, as well as my one-on-one coaching program. So I have a 12-week one-on-one coaching program that I've been doing for the last couple of years. And it's been, you know, amazing to meet all of these people. And we just all have a lot of the same issues. So it's great to be able to help people in that way. So yeah, if you go over to eatingwithadhd.com, you can learn all about that information. And you can also take a free training that I have. It's 30-minute training with all of this information that I mentioned to you guys. And then you can sign up for my newsletter there if you want to as well. And then my Instagram is also eatingwithadhd.
But I love what you're creating, and I love that you're creating this program to help women and or help people with ADHD and their relationship with food, and making it accessible and making it available for people, I think is so great. And I loved everything you talked about, and like sharing your story about your journey and then like what brought you to being a dietitian, I think is amazing. And there is a huge need for dietitians in the ADHD community. And I am seeing a huge growth in that. And I think it's awesome. But it is, we need to spread awareness about it. We need to talk about it. We need to break the stigma. We need to not let diet culture win. You know, those are all things that I really believe in. And I appreciate you for coming on here and talking to me and sharing your story as well.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been awesome. And I genuinely love what you're doing. I think it's amazing.
Thank you again so much for coming on here, and I'll let you go take care of your sweet little baby.
Thank you. It's been amazing. I'm really, really happy we get to talk today.
Well, that's it for today.
If you'd like to be a part of the KDHD community, check out my Patreon, where you can connect with fellow ADHDers, get some goodies, and help support this podcast. Thanks for coming on this journey with me today, and I'll see you next time. The KDHD podcast is written, produced, and edited by me. The wonderful music you are hearing was created by my dear friend Sylvie. And for resources on this episode, check out the show notes and my website. Bye!